This is Sports Jam. I'm Doug Doyle. My guest today is Mitch Berukowitz, the owner of the expansion Westchester SC in the USL League One. We're back talking soccer again. Mitch, it's great to see you.
Thanks for having me, Doug.
The expansion Westchester SC. This was something that you had to start from the ground up, and things are going well for the team. The next home match is at 7 p.m. at the stadium at Memorial Field in Mount Vernon versus the Spokane Velocity. And really, your team is located closer to New York City than the Red Bulls.
It's true. I do like the ring of hearing the expansion Westchester SC, by the way. I don't know if I can get used to that. You know, it's just always has this ring to it because it's just so new. Like a year ago at this time, we were looking at brands and building, you know, what is the badge going to look like? Do we do a circle badge or do we do something a little bit more European? And do we do soccer club or football club, or do you try athletic club or sporting, or, you know, there's all these permutations. And now, well, we've already played 15, 20 games, and it's kind of an unreal experience to build a soccer team in the United States because of how fast it's growing, regardless of what people are talking about. You know, the Gold Cup the other night, if you go on Twitter right now, there's huge debates over Patrick Agnew, whether, you know, Downs should have played. All that aside, it's a beautiful game, and the people in Westchester are soccer crazy, which is why we've named ourselves, quote unquote, Soccer County.
Within swing, toward the back post, and headed in! Connor McGlynn provides liftoff for Westchester!
It is the perfect time to have started a franchise because soccer is at its peak right now in the United States with the FIFA World Cup finals to be played at MetLife Stadium. Did you have this in mind when you were thinking about starting it, that down the line there was going to be some international world, you know, world fans that could be first experiencing Westchester SC?
Yeah, absolutely. One of the things when we first started talking to the USL in late 23, early 24, they said, you know, the typical roadmap for a team that wants to start and start successfully is probably around 2 years. Some teams, even 3 years, depending on the location. And when they look at how many sports are here and how much professional sports are here, they were a little bit, you know, iffy on whether we should even be thinking of 26. And we showed them, look, we have an existing stadium, a municipal stadium. It's not perfect, but it's pretty darn good. And we really want to launch before the World Cup because League One's going to be going on. The USL was going to be moving forward either way, you know, with all this international play. And we want to be part of that and really understand what our organization looks like at bigger levels. So there's nothing more than the amount of people that are currently interested in soccer and in the tri-state area and MetLife Stadium, you know, that was going to give us a proving ground. So even if 25 wasn't perfect, and trust me, it's been far from perfect, getting something up and running and a team on the field in 9 months in a market that isn't the most forgiving for anything, can be the most, it's the most challenging thing I've ever done in my professional career.
Facing a penalty kick from Obregon. JC Obregon strikes it low and just past Schaefer and into the net. Westchester finally break through with less than 10 to play, 1-0.
Everyone's talking about soccer, the World Cup, you know, the amount of discussion around on Reddit around U.S. soccer players. And then, you know, Tyler Adams is part of our ownership. It allows us to, I guess our feeling was not to launch in 26 and try to compete with how many dollars people are going to spend on the World Cup. You know, if you see the luxury packages right now they're being offered, it's really expensive. And it's also, there's a travel component. So we just felt like, hey, let's launch this year. Let's get some fan loyalty. Let's help the supporters group and really get like a base. And then we can start to think about strategically, you come out of the World Cup, see where you're at. And then, you know, by the end of 26, which 2 years goes by quick, two seasons. And I mean, this season is flying by. I feel like, you know, we were just in Greenville for our first game ever, seeing our first goal ever, and you blink and it's like 15, 20 games later. And so I think it's really interesting to be launched, get through the World Cup. And then by the end of 26, Pro Rel is coming, obviously promotion relegation, which I think is the most significant advancement in U.S. soccer, other than maybe the creation of the MLS. And so with that coming, we wanted to be part of that. We want to be part of the wave, not underneath it. So better to launch and ride that. And now with six new teams coming to League One next year, it looks like it was a really smart decision.
Talk a little bit more about promotion and how, for
Yeah.
those who
Well,
aren't familiar with what's going to happen, tell us about it.
right. So promotion relegation is not a far-flung concept anywhere but United States, where we play for championships and then the season's over and you start again. Everywhere else, soccer is based on a division concept. There's five divisions in some countries, three, four in other countries, depending on how many professional teams there are in their pyramid. So the US pyramid right now has the MLS at the top, that's Division One, then the USL Championship Division Two. I play in Division Three, and there's no real professional Division Four, although some people would say the UPSL, NPSL, NISA, and all these other leagues, which are completely legitimate, but not as established. They rest in what you would call like the sub Division Three kind of architecture, although they are considered Division Three for purposes of the professional pyramid. So promotion relegation is the concept that when you win, whatever that format might be, in most countries, it's the top team moves up, and then there's two or three, maybe four teams that play in a playoff, and that next team. So in England, the money that you make by moving up is so tremendous that obviously, welcome to Wrexham has brought a lot of this concept to America. But the concept that you can win and move up a division and play teams that are better funded, have TV dollars, et cetera, is completely new here, but it's been a fixture around the world for a long time. And I think what it's going to do, the reason it's so significant, again, I think the MLS, even though I don't play in that pyramid, I think the MLS did incredible things for US soccer, has dragged US soccer into the light and brought and created all things with which everyone else is now operating under. But the USL, what they've done is create an amazing umbrella. The USL 2 is a short season summer league for mostly college players. Then you have the USL Academy. And so we have an actual 200 kid academy already underneath our professional team. So the reason promotion relegation is so significant to us, and it's something I'm actually writing, I'm working my way through it right now. So it's a pretty well, I'd say it's well thought out, but I may stumble here or there trying to get you through the sequences of my thoughts. But the biggest issue currently facing US soccer from a youth perspective, Eric Winalda talks about on his podcast and other people do, is pay to play, right? There's been documentaries, and so that is the concept that you have to pay to play for an elite academy because it's so expensive. And that really does segment the population to people who can afford it and people who can't. And that means that from a meritocracy basis, the United States often loses out on like the LeBron Jameses of the world who choose, professional sports that they can play or sports that are less expensive to play, that have more community-based programs like basketball or football. And so soccer often ends up getting good players, but not the best the United States has to offer. So it is my thesis right now, I've articulated it publicly a little bit, is that promotion relegation in the USL will be one of the things that knocks the foundation of pay to play out and starts to change that. And the reason is because promotion relegation is going to create a tremendous amount of narrative in the US soccer world. It's going to create a lot of fan interest because the jeopardy that teams, just as much as you want to see your team go up, you don't want to see your team go down. So if you look at attendance and TV viewing for teams in England or in Germany that are facing relegation, there's no drop off. There's no tanking like you see in the NBA to get the first round draft pick. There's none of that because going down a division is so significant to your economic base that it's like a death knell for a year or two or three or however long. There are some teams like Wrexham was down for 35 years below in the lower divisions. So when you look at the narratives, that means American fan interest. But what it means more is the USL has built that second city kind of network now. So I play in Westchester, right? That's the biggest, closest suburb. Long Island's obviously out there. There'll probably be a team in Long Island eventually. But they've built, so we're in Westchester. Then there's Knoxville and instead of Nashville, right? The second cities in a lot of places. So because you have that network, what it'll do is players will say, I can start at a USL team, and because of the visibility of promotion relegation, I can move up with that team. So I think what you'll find is a lot of local players entering into, like my academy, the vertical academy of USL teams. And so when you get these local kids playing, you'll have fan attention on local players, which drives this amazing virtuous cycle of local kids with local support, then moving up into the pro ranks and moving to wherever. If they're great players, they might end up in Europe or they might end up on MLS teams, whatever it might be. But if I know I'm going to get a transfer fee of just a basic amount, $50,000, which is not a crazy amount. There's been some USL transfers that high. If I know I'm going to get that, then I don't need to charge that kid $3,300 or $3,500 or up to $6,000 in some academies for the 3 or 4 years where of his formative pro professional years or pre-professional years. So from 13 to 17, I don't need to make money off him because I'll get a transfer fee that rewards me for the money and effort and stewardship we gave him. So when I think you start to see that cycle speed up and accelerate, and we've already seen some great USL transfers. When you see that accelerate and speed up, I think what you see is a lot of teams like me will take more chances. I'm already giving 3 to 4 scholarships per season to kids who don't have the means to pay for it. And I think what you start to see is full teams similar to other professional academies. And so promotion and relegation, it's not just about winning at the professional level. I think the effect of it is going to be massive and change professional soccer forever in the United States.
Promotion and relegation fascinates me. I mean, I first learning about it when I was watching soccer with my son-in-law Joe, watching the Premier League, and he was explaining to me how it works, and I was like, wow, wouldn't that be great if it was like in other sports in the US, right? You have to, like the Colorado Rockies, like they could drop out of the Major League Baseball if,
I bet you their owners would spend a little more money,
Yeah,
right?
right. And the Pittsburgh Pirates too. I'm originally from Pittsburgh, and we're always clamoring about not enough money being spent on the team. Well, if you dropped out of Major League Baseball, then maybe that would force some changes. So that's fascinating. The next question for you is, you could have made other choices. You've been involved in entrepreneurial efforts for a long time in business and management. Soccer to you, does it have a special passion for you?
It does. I grew up playing soccer on Long Island in a much different world, right? When there was really to play pro was not even thinkable for a Long Island kid in the 70s or 80s because there was only such a narrow pathway, right? And most of the soccer we watched was the Cosmos. We went to what was that then called the Meadowlands, right? And we would watch, Giorgio Canaglia or Pele or Franz Beckenbauer. So aging European stars, which by the way, the MLS did a little bit of too. But when you look at the old NASL, there was no real pathway. If you were a good player, it was college. That's it. And so I grew up, soccer was always my first love. I did play tennis in college, but soccer was the sport that I felt the greatest affinity to. If you have a game at 2 o'clock that day, I couldn't wait. I'd wake up early and the next 5 or 6 hours were just like, I can't wait to get on the field. And so the joy it brought my family, my brother played as well. My sister played. And so it was a tremendous amount of joy. Now, my parents made tremendous sacrifices to drive us around Long Island, on travel teams. And so the reason this kind of came quickly, I was looking to do something in sports and tech. Either way, I was really obsessed with NILs for a while. And I thought, there's got to be some tremendous business models that'll be built off the disruption of NILs. And at that, and then when I worked with a friend to start this thing called Profluence, his name is Andrew Pekash. He's a complete prodigy in the media sports tech collision that's happening. And we were looking at some soccer decks we'd gotten the San Jose Quakes and some other MLS decks for teams that were raising small pockets of capital. And then we started seeing USL decks. And when we looked at the USL, it kind of made sense almost immediately. Soccer's growing. The franchise fees are completely reasonable, not like $500 million. We're in a, Westchester is absolutely a soccer crazy place. 95% of kindergartners do that little rec, 3-on-3, and it drops off, but that means 95, it's a social thing almost for kids. And so everyone has some connection to soccer here. The expat community in New York, I don't have to tell you, New York, New Jersey. I lived in Hoboken. The Italians that play on every, pickup and the Hispanic community. This is a soccer crazy region, the tri-state area. Absolutely nuts. And if you think of the early, MLS and US soccer were built on the backs of the Kearney, New Jersey, the Bayonne, you know, like the Tony Miolas and the Jeff Agus and Claudio Reyna, whose, you know, son grew up maybe 15 minutes from where I sit right now. So soccer crazy region, huge connection in my heart to soccer and the joy it can bring. It felt like more of a stepping stone. Like you don't have to raise $500 million and try to bring something huge that needs a 30,000 person stadium. This was something that you could do on a reasonably modest level from day one. Now the hard part is you have to build a community when no one knows who you are, and you're in a place where an academy is called FC Westchester or New York Soccer Club. There's all the names, and so really standing out for the first 6 or 8 months till you have players or a team was an immense challenge. So when you ask why, I don't have a perfect answer because there was really never that moment, that aha, eureka moment. It was more of like, this is a good idea. There's a lot of passionate investors here and people I've worked with in my other entrepreneurial ventures that have been successful. And, you know, I think together we can do this in a way that we become a hub of the soccer interest in this region. And if we do that in a humble, family-focused, community-focused way, it seemed to me like a no-brainer for at least modest success. Depending on, I mean, if you want to build like a $1 billion team, this is a pathway to do it, but what it requires to get there is, you know, so many different step functions from where we are today. Today, it's about serving the community, connecting the community, building, you know, the brand awareness, and putting a good team on the field and making it joyful. And people, most people, I'd love for you to come up here. Most people have told us the game day experience, they come, it feels like, because it has like a fairgrounds feel. You got the food trucks and, you know, the soccer goal with the speed gun, and the merch is underneath the bleacher. Like they have a beautiful grandstand, and underneath that grandstand, where we've created like a merch store. It's got this like second city feel, but also like a little big city swagger, because if you sit in the press box, you can see New York City from there. So it's like we're 12 miles from Midtown Manhattan. So, you know, it's a huge, it just, now that I'm doing it, I understand why. But when I first started, I'm not sure. There were definitely a lot of dark moments of, gosh, why did I do this?
We certainly understand that. You know, because of fantasy leagues through the years, by the way, Tony Miola was a guest on Sports Jam many years ago. So we go back that long talking about soccer here on this show. But people like to build teams. They like to say, okay, if I could start a team, this. You got to do that for a professional soccer club. And what was the mindset when it came to picking players? You mentioned the academy. How much did that come into play when you were developing the first year for the expansion team?
Yeah, I didn't have a tremendous amount to do with the actual player selection other than from overseeing like the process. I was really focused on building the team itself. And you know, you have to build your own team of employees in marketing and branding and game day ops and compliance with like league standards. So I was building a fantasy team of corporate employees, which, but I relied on our sporting director, Simon Baines, Danny Decker, who's my co-founder and partner, and Dave Carton, who was the coach we hired from Charlotte. We hired him pretty early in the summer. So those three were working more on the player side. Now, I did articulate a few vision elements that I wanted. I wanted players who were kind of like two-way players in on, you know, I wanted a lot of versatility on the field. I wanted to have an offensive mindset. I think it's very easy to sit back and play, you know, sort of like what we saw Mexico do in the Gold Cup, right? Is you might score in a few counters, but you're not really that adventurous. I think you see a lot of teams fall into that, especially in lower, like in lower leagues, because you get one goal, you hold on for dear life. So I wanted to have a team that put a nice aesthetic product on. Now it's been a little dicey so far because that offensive style and injuries and a new team without that much cohesion can lead to, you know, disjointed. It's not like everyone's flowing like a beautiful music. You know, you have a back four that we don't even, we've never played the back four that we originally had on, you know, paper. So there was a point in October where Simon Baines, our sporting director, was laying out for me, this is what the team looks like. And, you know, I saw three names at each one. So I will say, a little bit like fantasy, although it's real life, you do look at, okay, this is what this player brings and this is what they do for us. And I feel like one thing we got is a very high character group. Even though the results, you know, we are breaking kind of records for how many points we've dropped so far. We've led in many games because this offensive style, early on when our players are fresh, I think it's a much more palatable style. And then what happens is you start to figure out like, okay, people are getting fatigued at X, you know, at these levels. And I think Dave is doing a good job of adjusting to the style, to the players we have, the injuries. You know, sometimes you have a lack of depth because you might have seven or eight guys. I mean, in Pittsburgh, we brought an injured player just in case we needed him because we literally have like a walking wounded. But so when I think of the players in the creation and the construction of the team, I wanted certain principles. Now, we knew that there might be, when you try an ambitious style, more of a European short passing, then quick up the field, you leave yourself to gaps, you know, because especially when players haven't played together. Soccer is probably the most chemistry-based sport because you're using your feet, not your hands, and because the ball's always in play. A little bit like hockey, right? If hockey teams, if you when you watch like the old All-Star games before they started doing all this other stuff, and I'm a huge Islander fan. And in fact, you know, they have put as a Met, Nick, Jet, an Islander fan, the Islanders are like the most championed up since I've been born, which is kind of scary because their last championship was 1982. So, or 83, maybe. I can't even remember. So the Mets were 86. That's all I know. But when you don't have chemistry in hockey, it can look quite poor because it's a, you're moving, the puck's moving, and the other player's moving. And I think soccer, it be when it's beautiful, it can not just ours, but any soccer. It can be so beautiful, but when it's when players are not on the same page, it can be very tricky. And I think we're adjusting to that. But the players, like, it was amazing to see names, and then they start coming to camp, and it's just like, ah, this is real. This isn't just like a fantasy team on paper. This is these are good young men that are going to come together, and they're going to wear the same jersey, and we're all going to fight together. And I've traveled to each game to see other stadiums and see how they do things. Staff has joined because we really want to learn from what the USL has done. And I will say the Jägermeister Cup, which is a multi-tier in-season cup, has been tremendous for us because we've seen how Pittsburgh does things. We're going to Detroit soon, which I've already been to for the US Open Cup. So when you think of like our first 90 days or 110 days as a team, I've been to Detroit in Keyworth Stadium, which is rowdy. Right, their supporters group is rowdy, and that is they're building something new, but that stadium is quaint and cozy. So I've been able to see that. We've been to FC Motown. So far I have a pretty good sense of like what it looks like on the road. But you know, you play in in-season cups, you played USL championship teams already. We've had four games against USL championship teams through the US Open Cup and the Jägermeister. So what the USL is doing is so tremendous for creating a platform that folks like me can have this fantasy team, but it's real life. I mean, to me, I don't even think of it that way. I got to be honest, Doug. It's you don't even see it that way when you're actually when you re the if you said to me, what is the one surprise? The one surprise is how much the results drive how you feel for days. You lose a game, you have to wake up the next morning and work on the badge or on some corporate project or a sponsorship. And God, it is not easy getting used to the results. Meaning this much, if this is not like a team you love, this is a team you're bleeding. And it's not just me, it's the fans, supporters. When we were in Pittsburgh, we lost 1-0. Great game, great support. We had supporters there from our team as well. Great environment. And we sat there together and you could see the pain. And this team didn't even exist a year ago. So that's the thing I'm most excited about is to create that real heart in Westchester, you know, a passionate place, New York City. We all worked there. We all came from there to bring that passion and that joy and that unity together. And even, you know, and then 2 days later, you forget about the result. You move on to the next one, right? You have a game. The thing about pro soccer is not like travel where the season ends or so, like we have 15 more games. It's not like the season's over. So, you know, you have a chance to get hurt or have a lot of joy all over again. And each goal, each foul, each. It's not fantasy. You know, it's interesting you ask that because it's not like that. Once you're dealing with the real blood and guts of it, it feels a lot more like a family than it does a fantasy team.
Watch out here. Good opportunity for Westchester.
When they get out in transition, they're dangerous. Prince Sadie leading the way. Cutting in on that preferred left foot. Sadie scores! Bird Shipman seemed like he misread it. Prince Sadie leveling for Westchester.
Fantastic recognition here for Prince Sadie. The vertical threat within his directness of a profile player. Left footer playing on the right-hand side, so he always wants to come centrally.
Looking at this tremendous success so quickly for you, because you mentioned you just played the Riverhounds in Pittsburgh. It was a 1-0 game. I mean, they've been around for a while now, and so you're playing hard. And I'm glad to hear about the aggressive style, because for a soccer novice like myself, I want to see, I want to see that action. I don't want to see, coming back. And I think most new fans of soccer who are now just experiencing this because of the World Cup and the Club World Cup and all of the Gold Cup and everything that's going on. So I think you're definitely on the right path there. We only have a few minutes left here in Sports Jam. So first of all, congratulations on putting this thing together so quickly. And you mentioned your merch. It looks great on you. That's exciting too.
Yeah.
What will make you happy down the last run of this last half of season number one?
I mean, the results matter. I think the leading in so many games and giving up leads to ties and even a few losses. I mean, Hartford, which, is a division up, looked like we were totally in firm control, and you let up that goal and the momentum, like I said, chemistry and momentum, seeing that in real time. And also, when you attend 20, 30 soccer games in a 3-month period, you kind of starts to get in your veins, you dream about it. But what would make me happy? I'm already happy. I should say that, and I try to surround myself with happy people. So, there is a joy that even amongst the pain, that presence of, this is something that we created from scratch as a group, as a community. But, when I run into families that have their kids at the games and this is something they're experiencing for the first time together, and they thank me, which is funny because I'm thanking them for being there. It's more thank them for trusting us with their money and their time. I guess really building this base so that we are ubiquitous in Westchester, like I said, the results, the fact that we're on the field, we're playing, there's 300, 400 teams that have existed in U.S. soccer over the last 25, 30 years. And so to be here, to get on the field, we've already done what very few have done. Maybe 75 to 80 teams have gotten on the field and made it through a season. The first professional sports team in Westchester. But I really think what would make me the happiest would be to harness this creativity, this creative and real soccer-focused energy in Westchester, to bring families together, to give them 17 or 18 or 19 or 20, however many home days we have a season, to give them a place to forget about their cares, not watch their kids, but watch with their kids, to give them, that there's nothing more joyful than turning and watching your kid enwrapped in something that he enjoys or she enjoys. That's healthy. It's, the community, the cheering. So I think if I can give 5,000 parents a seat or whatever, however number, when you break down the attendance, if I can get 2,000 or 3,000 people, 4,000, 5,000, hopefully more and more over time to in the stadium and make it 20 of the funnest nights in Westchester. And, a little bit of beer for the adults, a little bit of juice and popcorn for the kids, although Mount Vernon doesn't like popcorn because of the mess, but just to create this incredible fun environment, then build a stadium of our own, a soccer specific stadium, play that attacking style, beautiful soccer, a great environment, a real community where we can help lift up kids in lower socioeconomic environments, give them something that they can cheer for, work for. We're doing a lot of work in Mount Vernon, which obviously is a somewhat on the lower socioeconomic ladder. So doing things that matter to people, for people, with people, and creating this real caring environment for soccer to thrive and to really bring all of this New York City swagger, but a little bit of the suburban warmth would be a real dream to do it with my kids. My son is very involved. He took the semester off from college to be involved in the team. He's now transferring to NYU so he can be close and work full time. To do that with your family, to really be involved and present in that way has been an incredible ride. It really like a very humbling, in some ways, almost, tear inspiring ride. And so I'm already happy. It's been the joy of a lifetime. And I thank the people of Westchester for helping us get off the ground. And now, I just hope they come out to the games and give us a shot and give us 3 hours to entertain them, give them some reasonably priced food. That's amazing gourmet food trucks. And, you know, I want to thank, just before we go, Northwell and Lita Rose are our sponsors. Without Northwell, we're not on the field. I mean, they are, as an organization, have supported us. They're on our jersey. You know, we've done right by them. We've scored the goal of the year, I think, in USL, that 70-yard goal by JC Obregon. But thank you to Northwell, Lita Rose, RXR, Benjamin Steakhouse, Score PT. I'm sure there's a few other sponsors I'm forgetting, but all of our sponsors have been so supportive, and I can see the community coming around. And to be honest, Doug, like, it just is so humbling, because this was just an idea and we just ran with it, and Westchester's really is circling the wagons around us.
So they've been right there in all these games, but no wins in a while. Now floated in toward Brown. Boyce waits on the volley, looping save by Jackman. And there is the final whistle. For the first time since March 29th, Westchester FC have a win in League One play.
I'm not a soccer player, but if I was, I'd want to play for Mitch Berukowitz, because your passion for Westchester SC is awesome. And obviously, that's one of the reasons why this is going to work. And congratulations again on putting this team together. Real quickly, just have a couple of minutes left. I had Richie Graham from the Philadelphia Union talking about one thing that needs to grow in U.S. soccer is vision on the field. The skills are getting closer. Do you agree with that?
I do. And by the way, what a job the Philadelphia Union does in developing youth talent. Again, great local community that plays soccer. And Philly Union is really one of the real organizations that have built that true vertical pipeline. Cave and Sullivan obviously is a great example. I think, you know, I hear a lot of the whispers of moving to a less 11 on 11. You know what happens? Soccer, the U.S. is just a big place. So we want big fields. We want big everything. And you moving to 11 on 11, you have big fields, but then the left wing may not touch the ball for an hour. And so I think moving to more 7-on-7, and like, obviously the curriculum we implement is more of an individual skill. But when I was young, you know, you had to go to camps like a Kerber or Vogelsinger was a camp that a lot of people went to that was at CW Post, you know, and you would go there to get individual skills. And that's kind of an amazing thing now, because you nowadays, if it's not part and embedded in the curriculum that you're teaching kids, you're really giving them half of the story. Because for us to be at the highest level, you need people to have a much faster processing engine. And I think that processing engine comes because a lot of people in foreign countries play more on tight field. Like, no one plays. I mean, if you look at where Neymar, you know, I lived in Brazil for a little while. So when you look where Neymar played, he was playing in a favela that, like, the field was the size of like a normal sized dining room table in the United States. You know, you're talking about 3-on-3, 4-on-4, it literally a dining room table. You're going to have good foot skills when you're learning how to play that. And also playing beach soccer, which, very funnily, the first time I played beach soccer in Brazil, I go in for a tackle, totally break my toe. And the guy said, oh, in Brazil, that's why we don't play defense. Because beach soccer, you don't have shoes on, no defense. You don't want to do that. I learned quickly. But, you know, U.S., we come with the intensity. And I think so we're focused on intensity, speed. And I think, yes, there's absolutely a movement of this newer soccer, of more European, smaller sides till you get a little older, so that every kid touches the ball and learns to play in shorter spaces. And then when you expand, it's like, oh, this is huge. So that is absolutely, he is 100% right. And by the way, credit to him, Philly Union is one of the true amazing organizations in U.S. soccer.
Mitch Berukowitz is the owner of this expansion franchise, the Westchester SC in the USL League One. The next home match is July 16th at the stadium at Memorial Field in Mount Vernon versus the Velocity. Mitch, congratulations again, and thanks for joining us on Sports Gen.
Thanks for having me, Doug. Great show. Love it.
Sports Jam is a WBGO Studios production. You can check out all the past shows by going to wbgo.org/sportsjam or wbgo.org/studios. You can also find Sports Jam with Doug Doyle on the NPR list of podcasts or wherever you hear podcasts. Special thanks going out to Joe Favorito this week for hooking us up with Mitch Berukowitz. Until our next Sports Jam session, I'll see you at the game.